Welcome to Hers,
His, and Ours,
part of the Scheist Podcast Network.
Brothers and sisters, Season 1, Episode 1, titled Patriarchy. Kitty Walker returns home to California after having been estranged from her mother for 3 years. She also has a job offer and a marriage proposal to consider. Meanwhile, William Walker has brought his daughter Sarah into the family business, where she soon discovers some glaring financial discrepancies that could undermine the Walker family's way of life.
Well, all roads have led us here. It's the first official real episode of Hers, His, and Ours.
We made it. Barely, but we made it.
Barely, but we're here. And we're starting with Brothers and Sisters, the show, which aired from 2006 through 2010, maybe?
I think 2011.
11. Yes, you're correct. So we've got quite a bit. We've got 110 episodes on deck.
Woohoo!
This is number one. So we'll have our work cut out for us, but we're going to probably keep this to about 20 to 30 minutes per episode. We'll release 3 episodes in bundles. So that way, hopefully, it takes us less than a year to get through recording the whole show. And it's like, look, if we're watching it and we have time to record, then we just jump in and record. We don't have to release them on Friday at this time.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I think we could also even potentially do more than 3 at a time, depending on how much, you know, time we put aside to watch, like binge it a little bit more. So I think less structure around, or less rigidness, I guess, around that. It's probably okay.
Yeah. Don't want to be too rigid. So I had never seen this show. So this is a Hers pick, as we're getting into some of your favorites. And so obviously the first thing that I see is Ally McBeal.
Of course.
Calista Flockhart.
Sally Field.
Well, Sally Field is not Ally McBeal.
I know. I thought you were just naming characters.
No, I was saying I was surprised to see that Calista Flockhart was the lead in this show. I was, of course, surprised to see Sally Field as well, because I didn't really expect her to have done television. And I forgot exactly why I have this particular thing in my notes. But it says, this is how I feel when my family group text has like 100 messages chiming off in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know if that's like when they're in the house or...
Yeah, there's a lot of collective scenes, which is why I wanted you to watch. Do you remember when the show was on at the time and hearing about it, or not at all?
Never heard of it.
Okay. And why I was so intrigued by you watching it. And I think why I loved it so much was because I always wanted to be one of a big group of siblings, and you are one of a big group of siblings. So I thought a lot of the family dynamics would probably resonate with you. But there are a lot of scenes in the show where you've got just the siblings in like the kitchen all talking and all conversing about different things and like the same thing also at the same time. So maybe that's what your notes were about as far as like the group text going off in the chiming, because it happens a lot throughout the series and we've only, you know, scratched the surface essentially.
Yeah. Well, you're part of that big family now too.
Yes.
And I mean, for people that are sort of getting their first introduction to us and to myself, yes, I have a big family. I have 5 sisters and just me, the boy. So sort of grew up in a household where there was always a large number of siblings. Like my 2 older sisters are a little bit older than me in that they were sort of like in high school when I was born, and they moved out of the house sort of like a little bit after as my mom continued to have kids. But there was always, I think, minimum at least 3 of us in the house. And then four of us, by the time me and my three younger sisters got a little bit older. So the family sort of, I think the way that the family sort of like kitchen dynamic is filmed is maybe.
Definitely.
It's produced, right? Like, of course, there were times where we're all in the kitchen and we're all sitting down to dinner and stuff. But these are also adults sort of in this environment versus it being a bunch of kids in that environment. So it reminded me more of the Family Stone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of similarities just between the family dynamic, sort of the way that the kitchen is like the center of the family and that everybody's in the kitchen. There's just like a lot of cross conversations and everything's like very punchy and very fast paced. And I don't look at that as a bad thing. I don't know if this show was inspired by Family Stone or if it was the same writer. I didn't even look any of that stuff up. Probably should have.
I don't know, but the other intriguing part for me was Ken Olin was one of the directors for the show who did This Is Us. Mm. And so I feel like they do a very good job of making the family dynamics very relatable. And similar to This Is Us, where the storylines are also very easy to relate to in some way or another. And yes, it's not all the little kids, but you know, one of the siblings does have little kids. So you bring the parenting aspect in it. Yeah, there's just a lot of layers. And like I said, we've barely scratched the surface on this show. So it gets pretty twisty and deep with a lot of family dynamic concerns and a lot of very deep topics, similar to This Is Us in different ways that, especially then in the early 2000s, that weren't really showcased much on television.
Yeah, and you know, we've only watched the first three and we're only talking about one right now. And so I'm a little curious to see how the politics hold up, because this is post 9/11. This is Bush 2 era. And it's a focal point of the show that the family is divided politically, but they're all very much like still connected, still love each other. I imagine it's going to rear its ugly head again at some point. But it's sort of like the wedge that broke the family apart. It's why Calista Flockhart's character was not in the same city as the rest of the family. She doesn't work for the family business. She's in LA, right? Or yeah. She's from New York. She's coming back to LA, something like that.
Yeah, she's in New York now. Well, at the time of this, they're in LA. She's coming to visit for the first time in several years. The politics theme will hold up for many reasons, which I won't give you spoilers on. And it does dive into why the politics became a divide.
Gotcha. I don't know if that's spelled out here in this first episode or not, but the dynamic that we get sort of reminds me of like Blue Bloods and Family Stone. So it's mm-hmm. like there's a family business at the center of it. Mm-hmm. And the dad is he's not just the patriarch, but he's the head of the business as well. Their uncle works there. The daughter, the sons work there. So there's a lot at stake within that structure. And then when I see Tom Skerritt, I'm like, this guy's like the daddiest of daddies in that I don't think I've ever seen him play a non-father figure ever. I might just be too young, but he's got the look, he's got the mustache, and he sort of has like that screen presence that makes him fairly commanding as well. So I guess the thing with how the show presents its politics, for me, in at least in episode one, I'm looking at it like, is this going to end up being a criticism of conservative media because of some of the discussions that are had and that we're witness to as the audience and how that discussion plays out? Or is this serving as a, like a springboard for conservative politics? You know, so I don't know if the two things are, I don't know, at least in episode one, what direction the show wants to take with that angle. Like, to make sure that you establish in episode one that our character is a conservative, middle, upper middle class, sort of mid-age demographic white woman who's basically, like, getting her chance to be on Fox News. And, like, this is our main character. That's an interesting way to start the show. Because is she going to be this voice for the conservative movement that we have seen in Fox News, and we've seen a lot of conservative media outlets that have that white woman on the panel? So I'm curious to see if it's going to go that way. I'm curious to see if this person that becomes her, like, her sparring partner on this panel, sort of changes her mind and it begins to go in that direction and they heal the family divide. I don't know yet. So that is probably the most interesting thing to me about the show so far, at least through the beginning of episode one, because granted, we're living in 2025, it's almost 20 years down the line from this, and the way that our country is divided politically right now, this show couldn't exist right now. Because it would just be like, oh, she has different politics than her family. They don't talk to each other. Right? So, yeah.
I mean, it kind of starts off that way, which, again, we learn later on why that is the case. And I will say, without giving spoilers, it's going to be a roller coaster ride, and where they take those storylines. But it's definitely... It's crazy to see the parallels right now, I think, and the idea around, like, history repeating itself too, or that phenomenon that, like you said, this is almost 20 years later, and the temperature and the politics and what's going on in the country and the divide is blaring. And I feel like at the time this was taking place, that divide obviously was still there to a certain degree, but the temperature wasn't as hot as it is right now.
Yeah, it's only become a bigger chasm since this. I'm curious to see what unfolds with her character over the course of the rest of the show, because they present it to us as though she's choosing to either be, like, just some dude's wife in New York and someone that she, you know, theoretically loves and is in a good relationship with, but she wanted to move to take on this job that was good for her and to really, like, pursue her career, and, you know, no shame in that. But she's choosing between either him proposing and then her abandoning that, or her going on and being the Republican anchor on this television show. So I'm like, she's super conservative, because her choices are either be the face of conservative women on television or be, like, the submissive wife to this other guy and have no career. So I'm like, they've only given her two paths at this point. And so I was like, that to me is interesting in what the show actually wants to do, because this is episode one. They have to set up a lot. Obviously, this is not, I don't think it's going to play out in maybe not even the first season completely, but I'm sure that will, there's so much emphasis on that early that there's no way that that is not basically the primary storyline, because it's like she has one storyline and then the rest of the family kind of is, like, sharing a storyline together because they're all in the family business. And so it's like there's two roads, and then her road has two paths, and then the other one has, like, a bunch of small branching off roads with all of the individual characters of the family, with the brothers and the sister that is now sort of, like, in charge of the business a little bit. But even her, played by Rachel Griffiths, that character, I think early in the show, she's, like, trying to fool around with her husband. The husband's just like, no, good night. And I was like, what's going on there? You know, so we're not getting a bunch of sort of stereotypical happy family type of stuff in the first episode. And then there's a ton of tension between Sally Field and Calista Flockhart. And it's a good investment, obviously, to have Sally Field in that role, because she's such a good actress that if like the fulcrum point for all of the tension and the pressure in the show is going to come down to this wound that exists between mother and daughter, you have to have an actress who can sort of like stand up for herself, but also make the audience feel it. And Sally Field is an excellent actress. I think even though she's not the main character, you sort of like feel where she's coming from. Cause it's like everybody in the family kind of wants them to kiss and make up and just bury the hatchet. But she's very much like, no, I can't do that. And we meet all of the members of the family, I think, in the first episode. So you have Calista Flockhart, who plays Kitty, who's the lead, Nora, who is the mom, Tom Skerritt plays the dad, William, and then in the supporting main family, you have Matthew Reese, who is not the oldest brother, but maybe the oldest brother.
He's the middle brother, I believe. He plays Kevin Walker.
Balthazar Getty is Tommy Walker.
I think he's the oldest.
Rachel Griffiths is Sarah. She's the oldest sister, I think.
She is.
You have Julia Walker, who is married into the family.
She's married to Tommy Walker.
Tommy. Matthew Reese is also sort of closeted, maybe, or not openly gay, or not outwardly gay, because he seems to think that he's open, but in talking to like other gay characters, which maybe is not even in this first episode, you see that like he's not as open as he thought he was. Maybe
no, I think he is, but in that, which I think is in the next episode, it's from a professional standpoint, because spoiler alert, that was a client or like a witness of a, because he's a lawyer. So he doesn't like flaunt it as a lawyer with cases or witnesses of cases.
Gotcha.
So he is definitely openly gay about it. You also have Dave Annable, who plays Justin Walker, who's the youngest of all of them, I think.
Yeah. And he's like, he's the baby, but he's also the burnout and the fuck up. And there's reasons for that, that they get into a little bit later, but they're all sort of, I don't want to say sort of stereotypes, but a little bit, like enough to sort of broad stroke your way into just getting enough of each character to like know who's who, right? And then you have Ron Rifkin, who plays Uncle Saul, and he usually plays a pretty good prick, so I'm curious to see what his trajectory looks like, because it's very prickish early on. And then that's the whole family. And then the two love interests are played by Matthew Settle and Josh Hopkins on opposite sides of Calista Flockhart's character. And then there's some other like little seeds that I think we'll get into a little bit. Next episode. Yeah, yeah, in episode two. But I know you're not a big fan of cliffhangers.
I hate them.
Yeah, you hate cliffhangers. And this episode, I wrote, it ends with the daddy heart attack cliffhanger, right? Mm-hmm. So Tom Skerritt just hanging out at the pool with his granddaughter, and then he starts having a heart attack, and you can see that he's trying to play it off, but eventually says, like, go get grandma, get your mom, like, need some help. But then he falls in the pool and either dies of the heart attack or drowns. But we don't see that. But we see him fall in the pool, we see the heart attack, and then the episode ends. So if you, it's a good recipe in that you get just enough of the family dynamics and who the characters are and what the stories are going to be. And then rather than just conventionally taking you into episode two with all those storylines, hey, surprise, dad dies. And now the family maybe has to be together in a way that they wouldn't be otherwise. You start to uncover some things that maybe weren't there, or that just weren't talked about in the family. So I maybe got a little bit ahead of myself because I said cliffhanger and then daddy dies. But yes, you start episode two and it's just like, yeah, he had a ungraceful death off screen and episode two has started.
I mean, this was network television still, but
you could have put him in a hospital bed and just see a flatline or something. But
I mean,
who did Tom Skerritt piss off to just die namelessly in the pool?
Yeah, I think it. I think what I told you, the reason why I was so intrigued by this show at the time, especially when it aired, was I hadn't seen a family drama. And, you know, we do get a hint at, excuse me, each character has its own personal sideline story, plus their family dynamic story, right? We just get more of the Kitty Walker storyline in episode one until the rest are about to, you know, unfold. But the fact that they start this show off with a cliffhanger on the premiere episode, and this was back in the day when we had to wait a week to watch the next episode, and they start off by potentially killing a primary character off. Now I think the, spoiler alert, yes, he does die. We don't see the on-screen death, but the creative side of this, which has a lot to do with the writing and the directing, obviously, is that he's still part of the show and they can do flashbacks as things unfold. You don't know that up front, which is interesting, but it starts to become clear in episode two, essentially.
Yeah, I think Tom Skerritt's too good of an actor to have on your project to only have him around to die at the end of episode one. So, like, if you want to see Tom Skerritt, like, he will be back, but he's not coming back from the grave. Yeah. That'd be a way different show. But yeah, I mean, that's...
it's like 6 feet under or something.
That's episode one in a nutshell. Lots of broad strokes, lots of ideas laid out.
Lots of story to unfold and unpack, and yeah, it's a roller coaster.
All right, well, before we wrap up episode one, I want to ask you, with all the stories that are going on, which one is the one that interests you the most?
Of the character, of the siblings?
Yeah, like what storyline that got laid out in episode one was the one that you were like, this is the one that I'm invested in?
I think that's difficult because for me, it was the family dynamic storyline. I loved all the individual characters because I loved all the actors playing them and I'd seen them in, like, I was a fan of all the characters or all the actors in different shows, but without knowing a lot of information, it was definitely Sally Field because I love her.
That's fair.
The family dynamic as a whole, but from an individual standpoint, at the time, I'm trying to think, I would say probably Justin.
He's the youngest, right? Okay.
What about you? Do you have someone already?
Yeah, but I could also be conflating stuff that comes from episodes two and three.
Okay.
But
fair.
Sarah, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Sarah was definitely at the top. I love her as an actress, especially in My Best Friend's Wedding.
6 feet Under, which I'm going to make us watch at some point.
And like I kind of hinted at, which I'll dive more into, I think it's episode two, is the parenting working wife dynamic, I think, was kind of untouched at that time. We see more of it now, I think. But yeah, she would have been, of the sisters, it was her over Calista Flockhart, although I love Calista Flockhart. It was her character storyline, and then Justin of the brothers.
Okay. Cool.
All right.
All right, well, that's episode one.
Excellent. We did it.
Yeah, we'll be back for episode two.
Thanks for listening to Hers, His, and Ours. We'd love for you to continue on this journey with us. The easiest way to do that is to like and subscribe to the show on the podcast platform of your choice. Follow our socials at Hers, His, Ours, spelled like time, on Instagram and X. To keep tabs on this show and others in the Scheist Podcast Network, follow at Scheist Podnet on Instagram, Blue Sky, and X.